Welcome back to RCR Talk. You're here with Marie and, of course, my partner in crime, my brother from another mother, my gizzy hard man, gizzy hard. Marty, how are you? Marty Gibson.
Yeah, good, thanks, Marie. Good.
Yeah, another week, eh? Yeah. Another week is rolling along. And I tell you what, I am so over school freaking lunches.
Yeah.
Done. Yep.
Well, I mean, let's launch into it. I've got a theory about this.
Go on. We haven't had a theory for a while. You have, Marty has a theory about this. Hit me.
This comes off that oft-quoted observation by Eric Weinstein, that the reason people keep going back to Marxism is because capitalism, for all its success, hasn't offered the people who lose in that system enough of a consolation prize apart from the welfare state that capitalism funds. And so I think what the reason that we're seeing such pearl clutching and shrill, you know, head on the forehead fainting is that it's a free lunch. It's richly symbolic for socialists who believe that there is such a thing as a free lunch. And the only reason that there's not is that the people with all the money are big meanies. And there's another reason, I think, that it is causing such righteous anger is in Maori culture, if someone gives you something and you don't show reciprocity, you lose mana. Unless, and this is the bit we don't talk about too much, the person giving it to you is a slave, in which case you give them a beating or kill them if it's not up to snuff. So rather than show reciprocity, Maori leaders are treating, again, non-Maori taxpayers like slaves by saying, it's queer, this free lunch isn't good enough, and giving them the bash.
Mm.
So this sort of also goes to, you know, this comes from the same place as the hysteria about the Atlas Foundation did. Because, I mean, Annie O'Brien did a great deep dive on the Atlas Foundation. She said, well, you know, all these people talking about it, I thought I'd have a look at what it does. And it seems to be pretty benign and actually quite kind. Certainly not racist. It's certainly, you know, not pushing the interests of mega corporations or anything. It seems to be doing quite kind things, but coming out of a place, you know, coming from people who are capitalists. And so what socialists really don't want is people who believe in more freedom and less government solving some of these social problems, because it renders them obsolete, because they're quite inefficient at solving them.
Well, I mean, it means that they're crapping in their patch, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just, honestly, the headline from Stuff this morning was they're now complaining about the lunches are too hot now. So, I mean, what was it last week? They were too cold. Now they're too hot. And I was saying to someone else in a conversation the other day, I mean, I still cannot get my head around. I know that this is a hangover from, you know, that other regime. I just can't get my head around why we have them to begin with. Because to me, they should never be there. Parents should be able to send the kids to school with a lunch. But then in saying that, I had a son, literally, his entire schooling did not eat lunch at school, didn't like to have lunch. At primary school, he would have me pack him a lunchbox for show only, because they would do lunchbox inspections to see what was in there, to do this whole learning about what was a healthy lunchbox.
He could have made something like the Japanese restaurants have, where you get all this plastic model food.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's exactly that. So I literally had this lunchbox with the stuff in it that, you know, things like vacuum packed cheese sticks and a packet of raisins and all this sort of stuff. And he never touched it. I would refresh it every term. And in the end, his teacher finally said to him, "Louis, you show me this lunchbox every day, but you never eat anything from it." And he literally looked at his teacher dead in the eye and he said, "I do it to shut you up." And this is I mean, I feel like saying, and I think this is the one thing that Christopher Luxon has done this week that I agree with him, because I've been saying to people, if these kids had a Marmite and lettuce sandwich, a box of Sun-made raisins, and a flowery apple every week for 6 years of primary schooling, they would have been complaining about their free lunch like we did, you know. But
Yeah,
anyway.
my mother used to make me unorthodox lunches, and I used to get teased about them. Kind of cream cheese sprouts and Marmite, and
She was flash, your mum.
yeah, peanut butter and raisins. I remember once when I was in standard three, the teacher said, "Hey, someone's left their lunch here, and it's gone all moldy. Who did it? Who did it?" And no one fronted up, and someone said, What's it got in it?" And she said, "Oh, it looks like peanut butter and raisins." And everyone said, "It's muffins."
Oh dear. No, so no potato chip sandwiches on Rosenstein's
Nah.
fresh bread for the Martin then. Oh
Yeah,
my
I mean
goodness.
the yeah, I sort of often think about, if governments are solving problems, they should do them less like Western medicine, where you've got a problem and you look for the most direct method possible to solve it as narrowly as possible, which is getting compass group in. And I meant to look up a bit more about compass group, but I didn't get around to it. But it's one of those multinational organizations. A more Eastern way of doing it is to think, well, how many problems can we solve when we're solving this one issue? Can we address some of the kids' health problems? Like, can we get a bit of pork off these kids by experimenting? What happens if we give them mince and eggs first thing? And can we build our brand with the changes we make as a food producer by tying up, that aspect of what we're doing with our primary producers? Just, give them really good food. And can we, make some sort of training system where families can come in and work at that? So yeah, again, it's getting back to that issue where you've got capitalism on one side and it likes to do things in a very reductive way, and the kumbaya of equity, leads to mass starvation and death camps. So yeah. Oh, Claire Trevett, yesterday morning, said either the government comes out looking perfectly reasonable for pushing a lunch that most parents would consider perfectly suitable, or it risks looking as if its attempts to trim costs have gone too far. By and large, the public understands the government having to cut costs in a hard economic environment. However, there are always cases where it might simply look like petty penny pinching. That is the case, especially if the savings are negligible, the perceived benefits of the program are strong, and if those who are copping it are children. So yeah, it is an emotive topic. But as people are moaning about it, I do think those people have never been hungry. I've been hungry. I've various times through various foolish bits of behavior. Sometimes I found myself in a city without much money. And I can tell you, when you're hungry, ooh, food's nice. Your sense of smell is suddenly really acute, and I mean, in some ways, I quite like being hungry for that reason. It makes the world, and you do get a just a you can feel the creature that you're living in that wants to eat. And I would say, if at any of those times someone had given me the worst of those lunches, I would have said thanks very much and guts them.
This reminds me, remember Dear Leader, when she, remember she was going to solve child poverty? Do you remember that?
Poverty,
You know, it
poverty.
was way back in 2017. I mean, she was going to be the savior. She was going to ride in on her white horse and save child poverty
Feed
for us
everyone.
all. And I remember the phrase she used at that time, because there was some that were questioning, like exactly as you said, are they really, how hungry are these kids really?
Are
Or
their
how
parents
much,
fat?
what is the level of poverty that we're talking about? And then she came up with this beautiful term, oh, relative poverty. Is
Yeah.
this a case of relative poverty?
Well, it's certainly a case of poor allocation of resources. And you have to say, I mean, they're talking about, and Bruce Cottrell, I mean, I'm sure we'll get to him but
I've literally just pulled that up. Yeah.
one of the things he said was, I wouldn't for one moment belittle the importance of a child being well fed, but equally I wouldn't underestimate the importance of the role a parent has in ensuring the child is well fed. It would appear in this petty argument over school lunch, this fact is being overlooked. And we should acknowledge that there are children who suffer from enormous family dysfunction and who, if not fed at school, may not be fed at all. And it should be logical to all of us that well-fed children will participate better, learn better, and be more attentive throughout their school day. Of the 470,000 students who attend primary and intermediate school, do we really believe that half or 235,000 suffer such inequality? And no, I don't believe that, which is why I think a lot of them are having a sniff at these lunches and sending them back virtually untouched. If you're hungry, you eat them. And if you're not making school lunches that get sniffed at and sent back, you can make better lunches for the people who really do
Yeah.
need them.
In the article, too, they had a photograph of the school lunches being prepared in a kitchen up in Ruatoria, and they were saying they've had no complaints up there. And that's just it, too. You know, there are programs that are actually specifically catered to specific schools, and they know what things want. And you've got kids that actually genuinely appreciate them. It's the whole carte blanche aspect of this that I find just so egregious. If you've got a school that is wanting to implement a lunch program off their own bat, and they've assessed a need, and they think, yeah, this is something that we want to do, and they organise things themselves and they make it happen, more power to them, I say, because they're actually looking after the genuine needs of the students that they have at the school. But I think it's this whole generalization. Like they've now, I think part of the justification for it being quite so blanket was as they didn't want to single out those kids
Yeah.
that
Yeah.
couldn't
Again, people
have
who've
a
never
lunch.
been hungry think about those sort of indulgences.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He also said, but beyond that, beyond these who cannot help themselves, are school lunches really the job of government? And that is the $6 million question, isn't it? No, it is not the job of our teachers to feed students. It's not the job of schools. It's not the school job either. A school principal engaged on lunches is not focused on education. And you know what? He's right on the money. And then you've got that other report. I don't know whether you saw it. I'm sure you did, knowing how hot in education you are, about that basic maths and literacy
Yeah.
examination, and they're wanting to scrap it because those to get equity are not performing. Well, why aren't you looking into that? Why aren't they performing? Rise the
Yeah.
tide on those boats, people. Let's just not empty the lake. Oh, far out. Anyway,
Yeah,
sorry, I'm
the
ranting.
whole thing is a wider problem, and as I said, we're looking for a Western medicine solution. Oh, these children are hungry, we'll feed them a free lunch. And oh, they're not passing the exams, let's scrap the exams. You really have to start thinking, well, why do these families, why are they not able to put two and two together about supporting children's education and them having a better life? Because there's, a lot of immigrants, are publicly quiet and they go along to get along. But I can tell you, if you talk to other brown people who move to New Zealand and thrive, they're pretty scathing of Maori making excuses for things not going their way when they don't value education to the extent they should, or else people who have had the privilege of having a great education then go and create an underclass by insisting that they only learn about Maori culture, or see things through that lens, and substitute Maori animist beliefs for hard sciences and mathematics.
There is also the element as well with these families too of intergenerational skills not being passed down. And by that, I mean basic skills like the ability to be able to provide a meal for your family, even if it is just as simple as boiled pasta and a tomato sauce. A lot of those skills now, there are generations of these families that are role and feel that those skills haven't been passed through, that they can't cook, that their idea of providing a meal is something that has to be bought complete. There is no assembling, there's no creating, there's no cooking, there's no growing. There's all of those skills have disappeared. And I believe that part of the reason that those skills have disappeared is because of that welfare scenario where you've actually said, no, you actually don't need those skills, we'll provide you the solution. So, as you said,
The government will do it for you.
the government will do it for you. And it's taken away the agency, and we need to get that agency back. I mean, one of the first number one priorities that I've had sending a son off now to away from home is I needed to make sure that that little beggar, he could cook. If he could do anything, if that's the one thing, if he could feed himself and actually go to a supermarket, or and he's in an area of Auckland where there are Asian supermarkets everywhere, there's like six of them within a 2 block radius of where he lives. They're all really affordable that he can walk in, purchase something fresh, and actually create a really, really basic meal at a fraction of the cost of popping into a Subway or somewhere else. And those skills are absolutely basic. If you're worried about maths and literacy, why aren't we also teaching those sorts of life skills as well? If you're thinking some people are falling through the cracks, okay, you're struggling here, we're going to help you with this. Let's learn maths while we learn how to cook. Let's learn weights and measures. Let's learn how to add. Let's, and build it into things like that. Cooking programs used to be the norm when we were growing up. They've all gone by the wayside as well.
Yeah, the way academia and government, particularly socialist government, has told, particularly Maori, but many of those sucking on the hind tit, that everything bad that happens to them is someone else's fault, as you said, really strips agency away. And the mistake that National have made, particularly when old Oinky started to get more criticism about staying and keeping New Zealand in the Paris Accord, when we're one of the last countries in it, he was criticised for that and just went straight back to his to the National Party 101, bash beneficiaries. And I think most New Zealanders are like, yeah, that's not going to work this time because there are far more unemployed people than there are jobs right now. And I think National would do well. Again, you could pinch off some of that socialist vote by saying, hey, look, we both want the same thing, but we want it in the long term. You're thinking that these people are poor because of a lack of money, and we think they're poor because the education system's failed to equip them to be self-reliant and to have the pride and the options that arise from that self-reliance.
Here's the policy from the Māori and Māori Party. Just for you, Mike. There's a lot of funding that goes back into my. Imagine if they actually took some of that funding and they said, right, if you're needing to or wanting to continue to get this sort of help and access, you go back to wherever it is, whether it be urban or rural, and part of that is you help fund basic kitchen skill programs. Because let's face it, these marae, if you've ever been to some of these more modern marae, the kitchen facilities in them are freaking top class hotel, I mean, amazing. Even the most rudimentary marae all have, because it works around kai, feeding the masses. And some of those nannies and kuia in there have the skills that they have. Fund programs. So if you want to get access to benefits or grocery vouchers or whatever it may be, you need to complete a 6 week, 8 week program on basic food skills, food hygiene, which you could even do a food hygiene certificate. That will be handy in the job market. Do a bit, some basic maths, whatever it may be, but get those skills. And it also reconnects you back with your marae if that connection had been lost. There's a thought. Gosh, that's practical.
Yeah,
Careful.
the old ringawera. Need more ringawera and less whaikōrero.
Yes, less more dooey, less hooey.
More kaha, less waha.
Yeah. Oh, that's
But
tricky.
the other point I thought Bruce Cottrell made very well, and I saw David Seymour on Wednesday. I watched the morning news,
Oh,
and he
careful.
pointed out rightly that the Labor hadn't funded the lunch program through to 2025 through this year. So, their choice was, well, look, we could either borrow another 350 million, tax another 350 million, take the money off doing something else, possibly in education, or try and do it ch cheaper so we could keep doing it. And Bruce Cottrell, the point I thought he made well was talking about the other things that we should be talking about other than the beloved socialist free lunch that there is such a thing as. And he said, if we want to get exercised about the welfare of our children, there are plenty of other topics those same serial complainers, politicians, unions, and lunch monitors alike don't seem so keen to engage on. That's why we love Bruce. How about this week's announcement that for the year ended June 2024, 9% of our children in state care were abused and neglected? This announcement immediately after the trials and apologies brought about by our very own Royal Commission into the same topic. 9% is 507 children, lives affected and possibly ruined. And then there's the fact that every month Starship Children's Hospital sees an abused child with a head injury so serious as to cause brain damage as a result of child abuse. Or how about our collective capacity to murder our children? We've lost at least 75 children under the age of 14 in the past 10 years. The current running rate is one death every 5 weeks as a result of family violence. The list goes on. Our youth suicide rate is one of the worst in the OECD. Infant mortality is sixth. Mental health, teen pregnancy, obesity. I mean, it goes on. But I think about those things whenever I'm watching someone whine about Chloe burning her hand on a lunch that she had a sniff at and sent back because she's got a she's got some muesli bars.
Yeah, it is. I'm just done with lunches. I'm completely done with lunches.
Let's
I'm
move on.
really, yeah, let's move on. I am just so over it.
Abruptly.
And one of the actually bits of breaking news that I've got this morning, which is on the front page, and I tried to get organized to screen share it, but I'm such a digital Luddite. I promise, guys, I am going to get, now that we're video, I should be able to do these things. But one of the things
Oh, if
that
I can wear a shirt, you can do the techie
I
stuff.
know, I need to get organized. Leaping up me to me this morning, turning the treaty into a socialist manifesto, Richard Preble resigns from the Waitangi Tribunal. I mean, he's only been there 5 seconds. Yeah, so.
That I mean, I sort of took excerpts out of that and pretty quickly had the whole article to read. He was saying, his view basically was that the treaty helped end 30 years of devastating musket wars that had killed, enslaved, or displaced a third of the Maori population. That's really worth remembering. 10 times more Maori died in the musket wars than had died in the subsequent land wars, which is what we're mostly focused on, to the extent that Labor's education levies took any educational reference to musket wars out altogether, because that's where most of the problems arising from the Treaty of Waitangi came from. And also, a lot of the land claims that are being made for land that was confiscated, that the Maori themselves had confiscated by murdering the previous inhabitants maybe 20 years earlier. But he lays out how the treaty was, and then goes on to say the Waitangi Tribunal has declared it is not bound by previous tribunal rulings that sovereignty was ceded or by decisions of the courts. The tribunal now says there are two treaties, one in English and the other in Te Reo, that are not translations of each other. So they assume sovereignty was not ceded, the Crown pledged to enhance the chief's authority. Queen Victoria agreed to govern in partnership with 650 chiefs. It is for Māori to decide what is to be decided by Māori. Māori were promised economic equality, and Māori only agreed that the Crown could control settlers.
Yeah.
did you? As I said, it's worth reading what he's got to say about this.
But it's also, again, a lot of this revisionist history. I want to say via stealth, but via changes in our unelected entities. So, you know, the tribunal was set up to actually address genuine land claims in the 70s. I mean, all but pretty much Ngāpuhi has been sorted, right? So what is then the relevance of the tribunal in that context anymore? And then you need to look at, as Preble said, you know, as he was saying, turning the treaty into a socialist manifesto is already there, babes, because you just need to look at the brouhaha that's happened now, mostly in X, haven't seen it in legacy media, but people are now starting to notice that the guidelines and the structures that many of our professional bodies, like the Nursing Council, Midwifery Council, I think it was the Council of Psychologists, the Pharmacy Council was another one that cropped up in this last week, and having a full lens of our Māori in there in regards to te tiriti, a waitangi. And it's like, well, hold on a second here. Who agreed on that and why is that in there? And of course it's in there because no one, it's been allowed to be placed in there by these public officials, that, and no one has put their hand up and said no. And of course, I know the Midwifery Council, they have actually received some stout opposition from the likes of Mawahine Korero, and they did go to submission, and something like 97% of submissions were negative, but they're pushing it through and doing it anyway because they do not care. They have an agenda. This is what they want to do. And if you're not on the titiriti train, well, forget it.
Yeah, there's a culture clash between Christianity, which places some store in telling the truth, and many other cultures. And I'd include in that Islam, I'd include in that Judaism, and I'd include in that Maori culture, which, you know, rises. I mean, Jesus saying, you know, you are of your father, for he was a liar from the beginning. And you know, you've got the Quran that says, behold, Allah is the great deceiver. There is a willingness to use deception that's characteristic of raiding cultures like Islam, like Maori, to achieve one's ends and to actually revel in how cunning you've been and how stupid your adversary is. And I think that's where that, and the reason I raise that is no one really talks about it, but I think it's a central part of the issue, and one of the reasons we're so at cross purposes. We're arguing against assertions that are designed for deception.
Well, it's a good old classic Marxism, the ends justifies the means, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, sorry, and that's the other one that it ties in with the upturned fist.
Yeah, sure does. Hey, now, Fran O'Sullivan, did you go with Fran this week?
Yeah.
Let's segue there.
Yeah, she wrote an article in, again, on the 5th of March, and headlined Five Ways the World Has Changed Under Donald Trump. And the three key facts in that were BP's strategic shift towards fossil fuels aims to boost profit amid slowed renewable progress. BlackRock's latest report downplays diversity, equity, and inclusion, aligning with sentiments in Trump's executive order. And the US military is discharging transgender members, no pun intended there, citing incompatibility with service following a Trump executive order. I mean, Fran O'Sullivan is generally on board with the BlackRock agenda, I find. And she ended that article by saying, what does it signal What it does signal is the US leadership will respect no boundaries when it comes to selling its worldview. Will New Zealand subvert its own values and to fall into line? Or is it time to craft a new story we can all be proud of? And there's an assumption in there that New Zealand's values are we've got to indulge renewables energy, tilting at windmills, that we've got to indulge people in mental illnesses.
Well, I mean, the assumption is that the previous mob got the last 6 years right. That's the assumption.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, nah, Fran. The people of New Zealand went, yeah, nah. So,
yeah. And I'm, you know, to, without wanting to jump around, there was a very, very poor old Luxon just been copping a hammering. And
or
I've got to
Oinky.
say, I think the media are gradually sort of coming in line with us in that. But Duncan Garner interviewed Matthew Hooton and Ashley Church and just gave them a shellacking. And yeah, no, it was. And one of the things that that Ashley Church said was, you know, for a long time, New Zealanders have been looking at Luxon and saying, you know, there's just that boy ain't right. Not sure what it is. And then Trump got elected and they were like, that's what it is. That's what we want. And not only can Luxon not, you know, he's not going to pivot to that, he's incapable of pivoting to it. Because his thing is to be a good boy and fall in line, and he can't, which is why, you know, have that tin-eared kind of, oh, good, you know, the Ukraine, they're democratic. I mean, they've suspended elections. You know, they're fighting for freedom. I mean, they were shelling their own citizens who are Russians.
Yeah. Well, then, of course, this leads into your daily brief on Monday. You're full of a bit of piss and vinegar on Monday, my friend.
Yeah, I got told off actually by my brother and sister for that. You know, oh, Marty, you know, just sort of tell it was that old. I shouldn't really say it. I shouldn't really say it, but I can't help myself. Yeah, made a cocaine joke and made a joke, you know, about Christopher Luxon that, you know, was maybe a little bit close to the knuckle, but you know.
Yeah, but looking at that whole thing, you know, I mean, other than you have to hunt it out, and then of course in New Zealand you see the New York Times filter on that infamous meeting now that happened in the White House. But then what has happened since then? So from my perspective, like I like your advice, always take the zoom out perspective. I'll be brutally honest with people. I'm not particularly. I don't have a either side. No, I just, I mean, it's not that I'm not interested. I'm actually highly fascinated by all of this, but I take the zoom approach and look at all the wider machinations that are going on, right? And it's all the different things. Like at the moment, this whole, that whole spark up created a new wave of nauseating social media virtue signaling, like Christopher Luxon, oh, we're with you, Vladimir, yeah, all good, mate, yeah. You know, I mean, no, you know, and this whole, you know, these the profile pictures are back on, we stand with Ukraine. Well, I know, no, people, no, stop it, no,
yeah, just
no,
because you're
no.
opposed to people being dragged out of cafes and nightclubs into buses to be sent to a to a horrible grinding front that's reminiscent of the First World War, where their life expectancy is 3 days or something like that. It doesn't mean that you're all for letting Putin do whatever he wants.
No.
It's bizarre that, isn't it? Oh, you, and there were a few notes came through to me after that. Oh, you know, you're just parroting Putin's talking points. Pretty careful to make sure everything I said was a fact.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happened.
What is so interesting since that meeting, right? And there were essentially two camps. One was Zelensky had a tantrum. The other was Vance and Trump were bullying Zelensky. I mean, potato, potato, I don't care. What I find really fascinating is what's happened since then. And I mean, let's face it, if you're going to insist on having all those cameras and all those journalists there, I mean, a show was going to be put on, and that's what happened. So that, and I think it backfired. I think what Vladimir thought he was intending to do hasn't really worked for him. Look at what has now happened since. He's apologized. He's backed down. He's actually invited and said he wants the mineral deal now with the United States. The EU has finally got off their asses and actually put together the weighting that they should have had in this conflict right from the beginning, instead of, leaving it to the Americans. And all of a sudden, people are a little bit more motivated to get shit done.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, my retort to my brother and sister when they complained about, me saying, well, you can watch the thing and find out what I said. But I thought the most shocking thing I said was that if you pureed up all the people who've been killed in this conflict and put them in 44-gallon drums, you could line those drums up so they touched each other from Tauranga to Wellington. That's how many people have died. And it makes me sick when people cheer on war because it's disgusting. War is hell. And it's a way that rich people play poor people off who've got more in common with each other than they do with their respective leaders. So I don't. Yeah, I find it very distasteful. And you can go back and see a clip of Luxon saying, you said your people would give their lives for their country, Zelensky, and you've made good on that. It's like, that's an odd thing to say, little fella.
Yeah,
That's a
yeah.
very odd thing to say. You've managed to drag them out of their nightclubs and send them to the front. Nah.
Yeah, the whole thing is decidedly weird. So it will definitely be watching this space. And again, I have to admit, I look at everyone and it goes on both sides too, because I mean, I see plenty of people who are not fond of the way, of the little Ukrainian midget. And they also too jump up and down and have their sort of positioning on it as well. I have to admit, I'm with Trump on this. When he said to, come back and talk to me when you're prepared to discuss peace. That's pretty
Yeah.
much where I'm at. There is going to be a compromise here. Look, was Putin being a little bully? Totally. That's how he rolls. I mean,
He's
he's
a
not
former
changed.
KGB agent.
Yeah, I mean,
That's all they do.
hello. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are definitely lots of geopolitical things that need to be worked out. And but it now at least looks like status quo has been completely, someone's picked the deck of cards up, thrown them in the air, and now they're actually starting to look and get things sorted. So
The
I
key
will.
thing is Putin doesn't want NATO in Ukraine.
No.
And if you draw a parallel with, say, if China was doing that in Mexico, you can understand it.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
I closed that bit on Monday with a quote that actually I use in parenting a lot, particularly with my youngest daughter, who's very, very strong-willed. It's a George Orwell quote that observes that the quickest way to end a war is to lose it.
Yeah,
And I think that's where
exactly.
Ukraine is.
And it's funny you should say that, because one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was, many years ago, we worked with a child psychologist for Number One, and because he's neurodiverse, as I've mentioned before. So one of the things he said when we were really struggling, we got the diagnosis, we're really struggling to parent, it was a whole brave new world for us, and he said sometimes you need to lose a battle to win a war. And
Yeah.
for us, that was around meal times. And we were having every night was this horrific fight around meal times, because he wouldn't come and sit and eat with us at meal times, because we were doing that, wanting to do that traditional family thing. And yeah, and it was, and I remember thinking, oh, and we lost that battle. And then ultimately, we now won the war, and Number One is utterly fabulous. So, there you go. Hey,
Yeah.
we now hey, what else have you got on your list before we go to mailbag? Because we've got quite a good mailbag. Oh, firstly, and actually, before we go jump to that list, and while we are discussing different things, because I want to do this each week. Looking at just the different legacy media, I did jump on the Herald. So the front page today, we mentioned that Preble article. This whole pack and say following the law by demanding personal details for a 100+ shopping bill. Oh, good night. I mean, this is all part of this. Thank you, Obama. This is all part of this IRD.
Money
Oh,
laundering.
money laundering, yeah, AML bollocks. But here's the thing. So this is front page Herald. Hollywood power couple living apart. Elizzie takes on Melbourne Cup with richest ever local race day. Plenty of players, but no committee. Rugby club could fold after 140 years. Wealthy townhouse developer linked to Premier Wellington site. She wants the meat. Queenstown burger joint investigated after new horror customer incident. And legend, bloody good cop who targeted gangs dies, and a safety issue, horse riders challenge new horse manure bylaw. Those are the quick picks from the Herald, which I was like, oh, nanny Herald. But then Stuff never disappoint me. Honestly, I checked the editor's picks and stuff today. Far out. This is, I mean, honestly, I need to start posting those. So today, the quiz, because obviously they do the quiz every day. Then, ready? Rachel Hunter is a granny again. Ex-All Black in Otago stall dies aged 90. No ifs, only buts. If you don't strip off at this beach, you're going to be banned. Sky TV takes steps towards a satellite switch, and council struggling to fill a $143,000 job despite 42 applications. I know,
Yeah.
right? Those are the
Yeah,
editor's
if you
picks.
go back to what Bruce Cottrell was talking about, that those should be the headlines.
Yeah.
And we should hammer on them until we find that they're satisfactorily solved.
Yeah,
The
exactly.
other thing I was interested in talking about was Jared Gilbert's report that he released about the gang influence in prisons. Because that, I'm always interested in those infections that then spread through the wider body, and prisons are those infections. The fact that we allow that sort of behavior in jail to perpetuate crime is astonishing. And he was saying, I mean, he only interviewed 39 prisoners across three prisoners as well as correction staff, but both acknowledged gangs' power behind bars. Oh well, they do run the prison. I don't know how to say it. They run the jails, the corrections staff are told the report. A prisoner put it like this: there's no longer a really strict code of ethics. It's the biggest group of monkeys in the cage that dictate what is okay and what's not. And it's saying gang membership is swollen. The report cites statistics from police which show that in February 2016, there were 4,361 members that ballooned to 8,607 by February 2023. So, 7 years. Correction stats also show the number of gang affiliates in prison more than doubling over 13 years. So, proportion of gang members in prison population has increased from 15% in 2010 to 38.3% in 2020.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's a number, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
and yeah, it's saying as well, leaving a gang can bring repercussions, including taxes and violence. One prisoner described it as next to impossible. And I've said before on the show, Christopher Luxon, if you'd talk to gang members, you'd know that's the thing to crack down on, not the pictures. Crack down on anyone who heavies anyone for leaving a gang and say, okay, it's open season, you can leave. You tell us if you get any stick, we'll come and smash them. And
Yeah.
another thing, if you're going to try and, recruit teenagers to go out burgling while you're woofing in your pad or whatever, that's going to be a problem too. Wear your patches, but if you try and corrupt children, if you try and rape underage girls, then heavy them out when they think they might tell the cops. Or if you try and heavy anyone for leaving a gang, that's when we'll crack down.
Well, and in the middle of this entire school lunch fiasco, the main headline here in Hawke's Bay is, a 19-year-old being murdered by the gang boyfriend because she wore his t-shirt into town and someone saw and he got depatched and he killed her. I mean, this is the scum. This is the behavior we're talking about here, people. And you're worried about whether or not the chicken and rice is halal.
I
I
burned
mean,
my hand.
yeah, or I burn my head. Yeah,
Don't
I
do
know. It is. But again, bread and circuses, we've discussed this before. This is all part, I think, the distractionary tactics because we don't want to actually discuss the things that are really important because it's too scary. Because
Well,
actually, we realize our equity is not going to fix this problem.
yeah, and we're hopelessly mired in that dichotomy of left and right, which is, we've got to find something, some other way through it. Left as well, they're in gangs because they've been, they've been systematically deprived and inequality, and they lost their land 200 years ago. And the right's like, they're just slack. If they just got off their butts and applied themselves, they'd be fine. And neither's true because you've got issues of IQ. It's real hard if you've got an IQ of 80 or 70 to make your way in a modern world. And I think on the right, they need to take a more compassionate view, but a long-term compassionate view. And the way that might look is what I do whenever I get the chance and I'm talking to a gang member. You just take them aside, and if you say, "Must suck being in a gang, doesn't it? Doesn't that suck being in a gang? You're hurting all these people, and you're doing all this scumbag crap, and you're going to jail." And I mean, it's possible I've been lucky, and it's also possible I'm quite a big guy, so I can kind of get away with it. But every single time, they'll look around and they'll say, "Yeah, babe. It sucks." And it does. I've been in gang environments. They suck. They're so tense. Everyone's just worried they're going to say the wrong thing and get smashed. And it's no way to live.
Right, we've got some mailbag, my friend. You ready? Lots of mailbag this week. Hi, Marie and Marty. Certainly no shortage of things to discuss this week. Sometimes I think Hoskins gets it right. And in his Mike's Minute, he actually talked about some of the, actually gave Donald Trump some kudos. Many people fell over about that. PS, the 360 Media Distrust segment was awesome. Well done to you and Alistair, Marie. Thank you for all your hard work in RCR. Hey, thanks for that, Jackie. And really looking forward to tonight's segment as well, because gender ideology tonight.
Oh, you love it.
Yeah, well, it's definitely my patch. It's something that I've been highlighting now for a couple of years. And yeah, with poor old Alistair, he actually played me in tonight's show. He did play me a clip that I found quite triggering. And he, oh, you've got to watch it. It's going to be great. It's going to be absolutely
All right.
fabulous. From Bronwyn. Hi, Marie and Marty. I've only just opened up the app this year and started trying to figure out the changes after a very busy February with my small business. Of course, the first show I binged on, you were the first show I binged on today, my favourite Eminem show. I managed to make the video run for one of them. Nice to see you both. But then I
Oh.
go back to black screens after that. If you go, Bronwyn, go back and check. I did a little webinar, which is on there with Alia. And first one, we actually talk about where you can find the turning the video on and off button. There's a little button there you can use. So a little bit of learning to do with the new format. Yeah, you'll find those webinars really helpful. Keep up the good work and thank you for reading propaganda so I don't have to. That's from Bronwyn. You're most welcome, Bronwyn. Oh, this one's great. This is from Anne. Remember we put the call out last week for educators to give us drop us a line? So Anne dropped us a line and she said, hi, Marie and Marty, in response to your request on why teachers have left the profession. I was educated with a Bachelor of Education graduating in 1973 from Waikato University. I say educated because we spent large parts of our time learning and debating about the philosophy of education and the merits of various approaches. I went on to teach for 10 years at a time when our education system was held in high esteem internationally, and results were high by both world standards, which of course is the period of time that you and I went through primary school. And we continually or continuously had teachers from overseas through our schools studying our world-class systems. My husband was a teacher too, and we both had the desire to be in our own business, which we did do very successfully. Fast tracked to my 50s and I found myself back in the education system again, but choosing to stay on the outside and do relief teaching. Every teacher I knew said there was no way they could have a life outside teaching, not for me. Then I accepted a position in an intermediate school for 6 months. Well, I struggled. And now it's only really now on reflection I can see why. Yeah, it must be so difficult to be someone that has actually seen the transition. And I've spoken to educators, and you've had educators, in fact, for people that don't know.
Yeah.
Marty's grandmother was my very first primary school teacher, so this is how far back we go. It was a different
time.
It's
a bit like the gang thing, you know what I was saying? You know, you kind of like say to gang members, doesn't that suck being in a gang? And they'll say, it was a bit like that at the student teacher, parent teacher evening the other day. So like, how are you finding teaching within the system?
Yeah.
It's aimed at mediocrity.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
really bad for gifted kids, and it really doesn't help kids who are down the bottom.
Yeah. So Anne has gone and sent some really good points through. She says, one, the testing, especially in maths, was strangulating. There was little time to teach before another test, hence the content taught was very narrow. I would say this went for every single subject. The narrow content taught is of real concern. So that actually almost goes to the point you've just made. No child was allowed to fail. They were always working towards a level that they should have been at. No child was allowed to be corrected for their habitually poor behaviour. It was about what I could do differently so the child would not misbehave. All reporting to parents must be in a positive manner.
Yeah, that drives me crazy.
Yeah. The curriculum was very narrow and there was no room for discussions and the promotion of reflective and critical thinking. Children were out of the classroom for all manner of extracurricular activities. Young teachers I saw coming into the teaching system were casually dressed, tried to be the children's friend, spoke poorly, and did not have the written or oral communication skills and had always thought that I had always thought was part of being a teacher. And those fantastic observations. And they're so true. I just am looking about, they must be continually positive. I remember getting one of number one school reports. Primary school was a bit of a whitewash, right? And they had this temperature like thing from blue through to red. Did you have those on your kids' reports? And anyway, Louis was permanently in the blue. But then the comment was, you know, they were trying to put these positive comments in there. And I'm thinking, my kid's in Antarctica on the scale, but you're actually trying to tell me some positive stuff about my son. It's like, oh my God, talk about the, it was the ultimate in gaslighting. There were good
He's
parts.
Got great hair.
He asks a lot of questions. And that was, yeah, that was, oh, anyway, there were good parts happening, but to me, these foundation standards, both in teaching and practices and teaching behaviour, are not met. The results will never be high. I hope this is useful. And that is fantastic.
Yeah,
Thank you.
no, very, I read that when it got sent out, really. And it's good that you've taken your time out to say that, and because it's the most direct way of finding out what's going on.
Yeah, and I really do appreciate you sending that, and thank you so much. Right, this one, I did a great interview with Penny Marie, which you know, Marty, and our Rodney. While some earth-shattering discussions resets education in schools, thanks, Marie, Penny Marie, and Rodney, for your preparedness to reveal the devious lessons our children and my grandchildren are being subjected to. I find it abhorrent that the schools are deliberately preventing the parents from being fully aware of the curriculum. I look back to my schooling in the 1950s and early 60s and realise how stealthily undesirable change has been introduced, right back to having no winners in the classroom or on the sports field. Even methods of learning how to read, spell, recite times table for basic maths. I believe all these things would lead us to where we need to be today. What a mighty battle we have ahead to restore the family to its rightful place for the betterment of our society and planet. It was interesting over the holiday period to find out just how sceptical my husband and I had become about the printed media, radio and TV news. Oh, Pam, you're amongst friends, darling. Don't panic. So good to have RCR back on the air in 2025 discussing relevant and current matters. Thank you for your commitment from Pam. Well, thank you, Pam, for taking the time to drop us a line. Hey, Marty. And my matronly bosom keeps turning my microphone off. Hi, Marty. I just watched the latest Fourth Estate. Fantastic listening to you. Three great guests, Peter Williams, Annie, and O'Brien. I really like the fact that you gave them free rein to talk without feeling the need to butt in. Bree is also particularly good at this too. Thank you, Jackie. Keep up the good
Oh, thanks, Jackie.
work.
You know why that is, Jackie? Do you know why that is? It's the difference between RCR hosts and mainstream media hosts is RCR hosts are more famous than we want to be.
Yeah, agreed.
So we don't sort of we don't need to be thinking about our careers.
Yeah, please keep up the good work and please invite them on again soon. So many topics, even in that interview, that could be explored. Hey, and you've got there's lots and lots and lots of fodder that you'll have for the next episode of Fourth Estate. There's heaps going on in media, and we haven't
Yeah.
even touched that. So I'll leave you before, I'll be looking forward to that next episode. From here we go. Oh, for Marty and Trump, this is one Todd. DC Alan Gisborne, compare the Trump Gaza AI video to a song from The Summoning, Flamima, the light bearer who Trump will become, refined gold and evil. He will conquer the earth. Orange Jesus will find that Fort Knox coal to build the third temple in Jerusalem, equals Antichrist superstar and one and only conspiracy to rule them all. Marty knows something on this, and I've heard him quote it, Alistair, from Alistair. Do you know
No,
what?
he's. Oh, what he said was he's heard me quote Aleister Crowley.
Alistair Crowley, right.
Yeah, no, I mean that is abstract, but I am cognizant of people who drive a lot of this funny stuff seeming to be Luciferian in their bend. And I mean, it's not that I'm a particularly religious person. I just find it, you know, that fascination with putting
Yeah.
666 everywhere and. The transgenderism thing, I think, ties in with that very well. You know, the androgyny of Baphomet or Mephistopheles, you know, man with bosoms. Who knows?
Well, it's also to that whole sense of a higher power, isn't it? And
The hatred of God as well and the desire to be God, you know, and if you look at
yeah.
the whole WEF project, it's trying to make themselves omniscient, all-knowing, omnipotent, all-powerful, and omnipresent everywhere. So if you look at projects, you know, their various projects, like controlling money makes them all-powerful, dropping stuff out of the sky or injecting everyone makes them all-present, and a lot of the stuff that's going on with AI makes them all-knowing. So, yeah, it's a thing. Whether you believe in it or not, it believes in you.
Yeah, it does. From Dylan, thanks to Marie for the interview with Trevor Loudon about Marxism in New Zealand. Such helpful
Thanks for
insights
sharing that
there.
one.
Yeah, so much we had no idea on. Thanks for all your good questions, Marie. You're most welcome, and I love
You know
talking
the
to
thing
Trevor.
about that, which was really interesting that he said, and I've shared it with a few people, is he was saying how in the 80s the left side of Labour got a concession to do the nuclear free thing, and so for that reason they did it through union people who had ties to Moscow. And that was the reason that the unions were very, very quiet while all the privatization was happening that was destroying so many jobs. They barely made a peep. And it was very interesting to think about that as Helen Clark was saying, oh, you know, these people in Europe saying, you know, that right-wing people can just participate in politics is enough to really scare us and all that sort of stuff. It's quite funny to think, well, she was part of that left wing that was doing those deals. So,
Yeah. And lastly, from Leo and Trish, has roll-on Lux Flakes been given 3 months to deliver or ship out? Thoughts? Do you
yeah.
reckon he'll hang around? I mean, there's lots of, I know there's lots of speculation on X that he's for the hammer. I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't know that they've got anyone
Hmm.
who's stand, you know, who's casting a shadow on him through their brightly shining light. I mean, Simeon Brown. If Simeon Brown's the answer, maybe we were asking the wrong questions. Although, you know, he is, you know, a very effective minister. I think that we're getting to a time where ordinary people need to do more and keep speaking out. We need to be speaking to our MPs, and we need to get over that issue that Plato identified, that those who remain aloof from politics are destined to be ruled by their inferiors. You know, here we are.
Indeed.
Let's do some thinking about what's important. As Bruce Cottrell said, you know, we're getting the media, and the media is basically just coasting to a halt at the moment. They're in an untenable position. They're running out of money. The USAID monies are running out, and all the little things they engineered, like the Group M thing, where only people who are saying the right things could get advertising, so that they sort of thought, "Oh, that'll secure our future." That record on people like us who do different things, so we can fund talking, speaking out without necessarily counting on it to pay the mortgage.
Exactly. And speaking of which, if you would like to throw us a few shekels to keep us on the air, go to rcr.media and click on the donate button. Every little bit helps because we're funded by the people for the people. And if you want to share your thoughts with us, you can do so for Fourth Estate, Media Matters, any interviews that I do with RCR Talk. We do the bumper mailbag here on Media Matters. And that, of course, 2057 is the text. And inbox at realitycheck.radio is
Yeah,
the email.
thank you to all of our foundation members who do kick in. And also, it's worth saying, hey, look, you know, if you are listening to it and you're not paying, there's no, it's not, we're not trying to make you feel guilty or anything. I know there's a lot of people who are really struggling at the moment. But if you can afford and you've got a notion to, yeah, it's most welcome. And I'd have to say, you're getting a pretty good return on your investment. If you
And
consider
also,
what RCR's done in terms of derailing the central bank digital currency, in terms of bringing the fluoridation issue in terms of, well, you'd have to say New Zealand First being in Parliament and the second COVID inquiry, it's money well spent.
it is money well spent. And remember too, if you can't afford to throw us a few shekels, share. Share the
Yeah,
comments, share the
that too.
bits. Yes, that too. Hey, look, Marty, I'm just looking at the time. I'm going to get told off because we talked too long. But that's okay. We enjoyed it. It was good today. And thank you very much for your thoughts and insights as always. And we'll do it all again next week.
Thanks very much, Marielle. Look forward to seeing your transgender 360 tonight.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Until then, take care, everyone. And of course, that RCR 360 goes live at 8 o'clock tonight. Until
Have
then,
a
take
great week.
care. Bye.